Oh, hey there. Didn't notice you press play. Look, I don't know what kind of joke you were expecting or what kind of hook you wanted for this episode. You saw the title. You already said the joke yourself. In fact, you're thinking it right now. Why waste such a good opportunity to not do anything? I don't have to. I mean, the joke is that I could say basically anything in this intro, and it'd be self-aware and funny because the part of my show that's cringe is me. Okay, but what is cringe? On this episode of Why Are You Talking About This? Nerd. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Way Tad Nerd. I'm your host, William, and I will be your guide today through the world of cringe. Once again, a topic that I am an expert in, and not in a good way. Calling myself cringe twice in the first about 2 minutes aside, I want to thank you so much for listening. It means the world to me to have my voice ricocheting through your head and causing you deep levels of discomfort and embarrassment. Like that one time in high school. You remember the time. We all have that one time that will forever haunt us. But while you're wrestling with that, let me tell you about ways that you can support me that I promise will make the memories go away. So, first things first, make sure to download the show or stream it on your platform of choice. Then, after you listen to the episode in its entirety, leave a review, preferably 5 stars, and share it with 10 friends you wish would just shut the fuck up and leave you alone. And after that, the voices should stop. Or you might need to do that with every. Or you might need to do that with a few episodes in a row until eventually all you can hear is my voice saying weird, cringy shit over and over again in your head. Or maybe none of that works, and this is a way for me to farm engagement. Who knows? On to the show. All right, so this week we're going to be talking about cringe. And not just the thing that you do when you see me on the street. I mean, the very specific emotion of cringe, as well as some common points of cringe in the world of writing and art. But first, let's nail down exactly what it is. Cringe, in the most general terms, describes an emotion that you get similar to secondhand embarrassment, but without empathy. It's a feeling of strong discomfort, embarrassment, and awkwardness caused by someone or something being so incredibly inappropriate, uncomfortable, awkward, or outdated that makes everyone around them extremely uncomfortable. It's like a Dutch oven of embarrassment, a bomb vest of social anxiety, if you will. And the lack of empathy thing is an important part of it, because secondhand embarrassment and cringe aren't the same thing. Secondhand embarrassment is putting yourself in their position, while cringe is just so potent that it hurts everyone. Another important part of cringe is the social aspect, because cringe can't exist by itself and is instead from breaking social norms, expectations, and engaging in facts pisses so hard that it explodes out of you like the hand grenade I have stuffed in my asshole in case I get pulled over. So, for example, if you're by yourself watching a video of a femboy existing and say, would, and no one laughs, that's sad but not cringe. Also, no one should laugh. If someone laughs, you're in danger. But if you're with your friends watching a video of a femboy existing and say, would, and no one laughs and they all look at you, that's cringe. Or in this case, you'd be cringe. Because the situation doesn't call for being horny. And if you're with a bunch of straight people or queer people that are not down bad, then it's really inappropriate. Cringe is also kind of the ultimate defense against things that are so shitty and unacceptable that a person deserves to be shamed for it. For example, someone on Twitter decides to unironically share a Stone Toss comic about identifying as an Apache attack helicopter to make fun of trans people existing, posting nothing but cringe in their comments is a fucking massive burn. Because in that one word, you're calling them not only embarrassing and socially awkward, but also entirely out of touch and making everyone extremely uncomfortable. It's like the short way of saying, no one likes you when you don't take your medicine, Steven. Or if someone says that the two places women should be allowed is the bedroom and the kitchen, and you should preferably have a different woman in each of those rooms, calling them cringe is kind of just jam-packing the entire message of feminism, how reality works, calling them a stinky right-wing incel that would never fit into their skewed view of masculinity in the first place, and the disappointment of their father into a single, super-dense slug of get fucked. But now that we have that, what does it all mean in storytelling? Well, there's two different thought processes to see it in. The first is exactly like the definition above, but with the addition that the author seems painfully unaware of their cringe. You're so far off the mark that no one knows what you're even aiming for in the first place, and you're acting like everything is going according to plan. In fact, a lot of times, you're acting like the man who invented shitting. The other way to see it is as something that is genuinely part of your story, or something you want to include, or is something that's a placeholder. But the more and more you see it, the more and more cringe it gets. It's kind of like a blemish on your work the longer you stare at it, and the worse you feel about it. In fact, the worse you start to feel about your whole story. It makes a story feel uncomfortable and hard to enjoy writing or absorbing, but it's hard to remove because you've built so much around it, or you're not really sure what to do with it. And oftentimes, this says something about you, the story, your character, or your audience that's kind of uncomfortable to think about, and probably isn't even all that true. Like real-world cringe, writing cringe blows up and covers everyone. So then, you might be asking, what exactly makes my writing cringe? Well, what I have is some examples of some cringy tropes in writing that you should probably think about before using. And before I turn to my friend, the internet, for help, let's look at three I came up with off the top of my head that always makes me cringe. First is the edgelord protagonist. These are characters that have extreme personas meant to be cool, shocking, and badass, with more edges than a razor blade dildo and a blender falling into a wood chipper. And this is super cringy because people think they're making, like, Trevor from GTA, but are really making whatever the fuck that guy from Hatred is called. They want a really cool, hyper-competent nihilist, but they forgot to make a character instead of putting every possible edgy emo kid desire into a person. Also, as far as I am aware, part of the point of Trevor in GTA is that this is not how a person is supposed to act. This is not a good guy. So it's kind of, you know, let's not, like, aim to make that kind of character if that's not part of your point. Anyways, second is the references to memes and pop culture. Because not only does this date the hell out of the work and really decrease its overall lifespan and reach, but also kind of like region and culture locks it. Not only that, but it's also very transparent what's going on, or what appears to be going on. Someone in the writer's room is having a hello fellow kids moment and are trying very hard to relate to the children. Also, just straight up lifting a meme from the real world doesn't work how memes work in the real world. I mean, in real life, part of the appeal of memes is that they are kind of just definitionally a little bit cringy. If you're trying to enjoy a piece of media and then they toss a random who wants to watch me hit the gritty in your goddamn fantasy setting, it not only implies a lot of things that should exist that don't, but also questions everything about the world, but also is a reference to a meme that is designed to be cringe, because that's kind of the baseline assumption of all memes and why they're funny. And finally, the one that always gets cringe at me is the extreme exposition dump. And this is mostly cringy to me because of how often it's used to just absolutely rug pull an otherwise important moment to save a character's life or re-engage the audience with a twist. And as I've said before, this happens a fuckload in anime. It's frustrating, annoying, and also exceptionally slows the story just so you can just stroke your cock to your own work. But anyways, one of my internet friends, I don't actually know them, but I really love their stuff, Mythcreants, has four cringe tropes to bring up. The first is whataboutism. I don't know, what about it? High five. Anyways, this is a real life thing as well as... which is why it's cringe. It's basically when you try to excuse a bad thing you're doing by pointing out that someone else is doing a worse thing. Like if a vampire character kidnaps young women off the street and the author justifies it by saying, well, it's okay because sex trafficking exists, like that makes their actions defensible in any way. Or in politicians defend cheating on their wife because worse husbands exist. Oh wait, that one actually happens. The second one they list is innocent patriarchs. Basically, dad is a good dude who's kind and just, while every other member of the family is a terrible piece of shit to the main character. This is most common with stepmoms and stepsiblings, but can happen with anyone. And what's the main problem here? Well, besides being clearly anti-step-parent, it does also really kind of imply that the dad is either fucking blind or complicit, and that means either men are evil or stupid, which isn't the point. And it's similar with the rest of the family because they're normally women, so it kind of implies that women are just malicious and cruel. And then we have empty progressivism and authoritarian apologism, which I feel like are both largely self-explainable. The first being when a piece of media goes, yay, girls are strong, and then proceeds to put all of its female characters in a corner to ogle at the men folk doing all the work and having all the character time. While authoritarian apologism is what Twitter users do when they decide that the part of 40K that they like is the dystopian fascism. Or in other words, when a story claims that authority figures shouldn't be questioned, traitors punished, and that the right authoritarian will make everything okay, and that they always tell the truth. CBR also presents some cringy examples, and some of them are, again, self-explainable. Like Black and White Morality, episode 4, you fucks, I know nobody listened to that. Missing or Dead Parents, because it kind of implies that your parents are just holding you back. Love being the end-all of your story, where the end goal is love and love alone. And finally, that beauty equals good, since that, you know, kind of removes the entire gray area of unconventional beauty, subjectivity, and also that Uggos aren't usually bad people, just like hot people usually are bad people. I mean, honestly, normally it's like the like mid-range, like, 5s, 6s, and 7s that are the shitty people, and that brings them down to like a 1 or 2. Like, they're... Anyways. They also include some deeper ones, like the heroes being forgiven for being evil. Basically, the heroes can be pardoned for their shittiness and make mistake after mistake and have everything pan out because of one action, which entirely robs the stakes of the story and is also not how life works, and we all know it. Sorry, shonen protagonist, you can't go from torturing someone to near death before locking them in a prison of their own mind and have us forgive you because you were vaguely nice to an attractive, big-tittied woman. Because that's just natural. They also include stereotypical teens as cringe, which I agree. In this trope, teenagers are all emo, immature, rebellious hellions that are shitheads for fun and tell their parents they wish they were never born, and fuck you, mom and dad. Because this isn't the case for all kids. And when it happens this much, it starts to feel like both mocking and devaluing to the actual experience of being a teenager. Not only that, but yeah, I mean, some kids are well-behaved by choice. Or they're shitheads, but they don't scream and yell at their parents. Or they don't act out. Or their parents let them act out and they're responsible about it. Or they're not. Every kid is different. And the last two they have, on the list are the subliminal adult jokes and the villainous mentor. Both tropes that on their own aren't necessarily cringy, but what makes them cringy is dosage. For subliminal adult jokes, it's not bad until it's consistent and aggressive. Almost to the point of explaining the joke to the child audience or forcing them to ask questions of their parents that the joke is supposed to be aimed at. And not only does this become tired, but also, surprise, surprise, parents don't normally like dirty jokes being shoved in their child's face. And if you do it enough, it gets to the point where the adults are just uncomfy because it really seems like the movie is the uncle you shouldn't leave your kids alone with, and the kids are uncomfy because they don't know what's going on, but mom and dad are uncomfy, or they know it's an adult joke and they know they shouldn't have heard it. But in the case of the villainous mentor, when done appropriately, it's a good twist, either of the plot kind or the knife kind. But if you keep fucking doing it over and over or play too hard on this trope, you suddenly start to really play into some people's trauma where they were taken advantage of by a mentor. And less painfully poignant, this is cringe because it takes the okay boomer thing way too far. Because think, usually the mentor is old. In our modern day, a lot of old people have fucked up a whole lot of shit they'll die before they see the consequences of. So it's kind of easy to hate on them. But if every single old person in your story is secretly a knife-wielding sociopath, it comes across very like, hey, look, fellow kids. Okay, boomer, am I right? Check out these old people. Aren't they just like your racist grandpa? Which, you know, that feels just kind of tone-deaf. And we also have a list from Jenna Morrissey. I should really, like, try with names. Who includes things like over-sexualized female characters, lore dumps, predatory age gaps between romantic partners, people having zero concept of how siblings actually talk to each other. Oh, and if you're an only child like I am, having a sibling is like having a friend that you fucking hate with every fiber of your being, but in the way where you genuinely love them and care about them. Infantilizing women, and also your lack of research fucking up your entire story. All of which doesn't require really any explanation. But she also talked about things like epilogue babies, where your characters have babies at the end of the story. And she marks this as bad because not only does it waste a lot of potential story, it also takes a fuckload of context, information, and honestly suffering that comes with having kids and forces it to the end of the story as an overused trope to symbolize success, which isn't available to everyone and is such an obligation in some genres that even characters it doesn't make sense for do it. And there's the quirky, relatable loser, the real Scott Pilgrims of the fictional world. This can be cringe and tired because a lot of the times the character just refuses character growth and to take responsibility to be weird and quirky. And usually the author will play it off as, wow, aren't they funny, lol, until they once again, while they once again violate everyone's boundaries for fun. And the last one she lists is the trope of purple prose, which is just overly flowery language that is way, way too poetic for what you're writing. Because sure, sometimes it's a little nice to write poetry, but you shouldn't be in the middle of a battle scene and then just out of nowhere switch to poetics. If your writing style is poetic, go for it. But if not, doing this is just cringy because it doesn't match and looks like you're just trying to be a pompous asshole. And finally, Snow White Writes lists 11 different cringy tropes. These ones are all surprisingly self-explanatory. Now, that's not to say that she didn't try very hard, just that you'd fucking see these all the time. And she lists boring main characters, absentee or dumb parents, love stories that glamorize infidelity, stories where the plot is dependent on no one fucking talking to each other, dark and angsty friends or love interests, kids and teens that act like adults, antagonists that won't fucking stop monologuing to just do the one thing that they need to win, fake woman empowerment, plain James and Jacks with unrealistic amounts of romantic interest, tragic backstories that are only ever mentioned once and never again, and people with zero experience saving the entire goddamn world in record time, despite millions of experts trying and failing. And those are, again, just some examples. There's a truly massive number of cringy tropes, and otherwise normal tropes that become cringy if you don't exercise some control. In fact, many of them we've talked about on this show, including the Mary Sue, self-inserts, and race coding. So then why exactly did I go through all of that? Well, because these tropes can help us to determine the categories of cringe. Those being the cringe of the people, or cringe of the character, cringe of the author, cringe of the format, cringe of the culture, and cringe of the self-righteous. Cringe of the people would describe cringy character traits or archetypes, like edgelords, innocent patriarchs, teen stereotypes, over-sexualized women, and villainous mentors. Cringe of the author would be all the things that break the fourth wall or insert real-world things that you don't have any business talking about, like meme references, authoritarian apologism, and empty progressivism. Cringe of the format would be tropes that cause problems in the plot or within the prose of your writing that causes cringe. Like purple prose, lore dumps, siblings talking to each other like they want to fuck each other, antagonists procrastinating, and the if you stop talking, the plot stops trope. While cringe of the culture would be cringy and uncomfortable relationship and behavior tropes like predatory age gaps, characters being forgiven for their shitty behavior, and absentee or dumb parents. And finally are the cringe of the self-righteous, which are all the moral tropes like whataboutism and beauty being good. But with all that defining, we need to stop for a moment. No, not to talk about the history. Talk about why this matters. Yep, that's right. No history. Because, fuck that shit, I'm not looking at the history of cringe. I don't want to die that painfully. So yes, while I've been describing cringe, I haven't really talked a lot about why you should even care. And to put simply, it matters to not only understand, but call out cringe, not because it's fun to be mean, but because being cringy is a part of growing as a creator. Everyone is cringe at times, especially when you're just starting out. And you'll never change unless someone calls you out. We can all be cringe, but that doesn't mean we should just lay down and take it. Some of these tropes can become bad writing habits, which would become just shit writing in general, which if you let proliferate enough, without calling it out, creates the same factory production line of garbage that we shovel into our brains constantly. But the other side of this is that we need to accurately describe cringe and be sure to call it out. The cringe doesn't lose its meaning and value. Because remember, like we talked about above, there's a whole lot of information and emotion that can be conveyed through calling something cringe. Information that gets lost if we start describing everything that makes us vaguely upset or uncomfortable cringe. And that gets lost if we start calling things that aren't harmful cringe. Writing cringe is about writing about feminism or guns in a positive way, or saying some of your turbo ultra space marines are actually pussy bearers. It's about writing something problematic and harmful that's really awkward, uncomfortable, and or antisocial, and missing the mark entirely on writing it well. And if someone calls your work cringy, that's a chance to seriously inspect how you write. Which, all of that, I think, honestly kind of makes the current section useless too. So, we kind of have a super short episode today. Lucky me. Or you, depending on if you're listening to this because of some kind of genie curse or something. So let's just get right into how to deal with your cringe. And we're going to start off with just some general groupings. These are to be used if you encounter something cringy and you can identify the category it belongs in. But also, some of these categories have overlapping advice. So first, we're going to be looking at the cringe of the people and the culture together, since they can be fixed in your writing in very similar ways. The first and best way to combat these is to make your characters a lot more nuanced and their relationships more complicated than whatever you've written down. Because people are complex and so are their relationships. If you're really attached to using these traits or your story needs one of those cultural cringe things, which I'm going to say doubt on that one, bud, then this will help you at the very least reduce the cringe. Because a lot of that cringe comes from them being overgeneralized stereotypes. If you have a good explanation or context for these tropes and go into some depth with them as your audience is exposed to them and teach them some of the background information surrounding it, then at least make the traits seem consistent and reasonable. However, the second piece of advice, and probably the better one, is to just not. Because none of these tropes are core characteristics to any genre they're in. I mean, think, when was the last time a genre demanded that you have an edgy 32-year-old protagonist with a sexy 19-year-old do-nothing female sidekick he's trying to fuck? And I swear to fuck, do not say anime. We all know. Besides anime. It'll often be a lot easier, cleaner, and also more reasonable to just straight up not include something like a massive age gap or infidelity being a good thing. But if you do decide that, you know what, yeah, I want to write some hardcore, undistilled cringe today, and decide to make a character relationship like one of these, the best way to use it is to give other people very real and normal human reactions to it. To everyone that isn't the edgelord, they're just a weird, sad loser. While to the entire assembly at the wedding of two cheaters, that's exactly what they are. That yes, this is a person that exists, and they might even be the protagonist. That doesn't mean that they're normal or justified in acting how they do. They may in fact be openly and aggressively opposed. Just like in real life. For cringe the author and self-righteousness, you first need to take a step back. Can you pull this off? If you doubt yourself for even a moment, don't do it. Of course, some of them should never be attempted, like the meme references or other tropes that are really in the moment. These things aren't cringy if they're well done, but much like shooting a cigarette in your mouth to light it, the people who can know it's a dumb idea and they don't. But if you do think you can pull it off, go ahead and give it a shot. Then show a trusted friend that you believe the opinions of and will give you an honest answer. And when they call it cringy, don't come crying to me. I warned you. But if your heart is set on it, modify them a little bit before use. Like, conceal and modify your memes to fit your story and turn into a more subtle joke that your savviest audience members will understand, but that doesn't really get in the way of your story. And also ensure that your empowerment and progressivism are real and not just pandering virtue signaling. As for your moral lessons, keep them to lessons you believe. Be specific. Don't just say greed bad. Talk about what aspects specifically are bad and why. And in general, in both life and writing, try not to side with fascists. It's okay to have characters say something incorrect and morally questionable, as long as the narrative doesn't prove them right by not questioning them and pushing back. But yeah, don't recommend. Overall, just don't do this. You're not going to pull it off. That isn't a burn on you, that's a burn on these tropes. And finally, for cringe of the format, the quickest and easiest advice would be simply, don't do it. Because unlike the others, very little about these tropes are actually good. These tropes and styles of prose are usually caused by lack of experience and not really understanding how this whole writing thing works. And hey, that's okay. You'll get less cringe over time and eventually be good at telling the story that you want to tell. But in the short term, the most important things are really some writing basics. Make sure you write in a way that comes naturally and about something you either know a lot about or don't mind doing a lot of research on. Also, that's within audience expectation and can actually hold the weight of the narrative, characters, and audience interest. But because I mentioned them, let's run through how to do a few of these tropes. First is the edgelord protagonist. And these kinds of characters are most infamous for being, one, too edgy, and two, interfering in group dynamics that's important in both role-playing games and writing. You can fix that in a few ways. First, you can try playing them straight, but don't make them the hyper badass that everyone loves. No, make it realistic. Show that it's infantile and immature and really putting everyone in a down mood. But in a really real way. Not like, well, yeah, that's Jerry. You can't have shit around Jerry. And more like, wow, I really hate you, you fucking asshole. So much so that I'm not going to even respond when you talk. Also give them chances to improve and become a better, more mellow person. Let them start to care about and love people around them and find some goodness. Like maybe your cringe edgelord, whose heart is nothing but darkness and pain, like you'd never believe, falls in love with the team's goth twink, and now he's coming out of his shell a bit and realizing that, yeah, these people are actually pretty cool. If you want to avoid an edgelord, that's also fairly easy. You can have a character with edges, but them knowing those edges hurt people and them being genuinely unbothered is both cringy and also unrealistic. Even edgelords in real life deep down care. And hey, to you little edgelords out there, I mean you. It's okay that hurts, buddy. You get to cry too. But to save your character from being an edgelord, make them aware that their actions cause harm and be deeply bothered by that. Or they only really have a few edges. Or the ones they do have aren't particularly harmful to the group. Second is how to salvage a boring protagonist. These guys usually come from a desire to be inoffensive or make an easy character to turn into a self-insert for a more mild-mannered and emotionally neutral writer. So to fix this, let's look at the things they don't do. First and primarily, they don't capture your audience. And no, not because they're stupid, but because this dude is them in all the ways that are boring and in the ways that are fun. So they can't really relate. So make their personality a bit different, their outlook on things in general, or on particular topics, really weird or abnormal, and maybe give them a weird or obsessive interest. That one's always fun. But boring protagonists also fail to make choices. So make them do that. Important, plot-altering choices. If the story will happen regardless of their input, then no one will give a shit about them. These characters also tend to be a bit too generic in everyman, so give them a unique story, cultural background, and some habits and idiosyncrasies. I shouldn't have used that word, because apparently I can't say it today. But, yeah, like a personality. Finally, make sure your characters change and grow, because a boring protagonist won't ever change over the course of a show. So the best way to make them interesting is to develop them further and further along the course of the story. Third are stereotypical teens. And the thing is that teenage behavior that you see in stereotypes do come from something real. Teenagers really are moody, sleepy, immature, think they know what's good, cocky, horny, hungry, and contrarian. But that's all because they're starting to create their own identity at a time when hormones are going fucking ballistic, a bunch of mental illnesses are starting to show themselves, are dealing with real-world consequences and big questions while still being treated like a child, and are also developing and growing in a lot of energy-intensive and draining ways. But everyone's teenage experience is different. Lean on your own memories from when you were a teenager. A lot of the core principles will be the same or similar, even if these specifics are different. If you're in your fantasy setting, where people start adventuring at 15, the most retire by 25, and the average life of teenagers today is vastly different, they still have to deal with a lot of the same emotional, physical, spiritual, existential, and social struggles. Don't write stereotypical teenagers because it'll be very clear that you don't understand them. Instead, write characters that are in a vulnerable and confusing part of their life, trying to deal with that on top of all the other shit they have to do, while surrounded by people minimizing what is, in their mind, the most stress that they will ever experience. Also, if you're a teenager and you're listening to this, I mean, first of all, like, you're rebelling in the wrong way. This is the wrong path for you. But also, this isn't, what you're going through right now is not the most stress that you'll ever experience. It will get worse. And I'm saying this in a way that's, like, hopeful. Like, you got this. This is not the worst thing that you're going to survive. Don't worry about it. Okay, but next is exposition dumps. Pace yourself. You don't need to tell your audience every single piece of lore all at once. Bring up only what's absolutely necessary to understand something. If you want to bring up more right now because it'll set something up or you're proud of it, keep it brief and relevant. And if you want to go deeper, give us a good reason why we want to know. If you're expositing through dialogue, it has to come across naturally. You can't just have a character stop, turn to the camera, and take 25 fucking minutes to explain a concept to us out of nowhere. Because that's incredibly unnatural. Especially if it's treated like normal. Instead, turn into an interaction where the characters talk how they normally talk to each other to share information, but like, they know the info without saying, well, as you know. Or I guess you could do what Jujutsu Kaisen did and say that your powers get stronger the more people who know how it works, but that's kind of lame. But as an example, if characters are talking about how hard a monster is to kill, have one of them say something like, oh, well, yeah, give me a couple of Arvadian hunting hounds and I'll get the job done. And then have the other respond and say, you can't be serious. Arvadian hounds would get waffle stomped by that thing. And then they'd say back, yeah, right, if four can take down a raging war mammoth, this thing is easy. Because this dialogue exchange gives us a bunch of new and cool information without bogging down the story. It also makes the characters sound more competent and like experts, which helps to believe the things that they say and believe to be true. Then we have villainous mentors. When done correctly, this one is actually really useful. When writing a villainous mentor or one who becomes villainous, the primary question you need to answer is why. Because why would the bad guy teach the good guy? Why would the good guy learn from them? Why haven't they killed each other? There's a few ways to deal with this. First, the mentor is an antagonist and not the villain. So they're teaching someone to take out the bad guy, and the hero needs any help that they can get. Second, the hero doesn't know they're a bad guy, and the mentor's trying to turn them to the dark side, or assume they're on the dark side. Third, the hero has bigger fish to fry, and sure, they're a bad person, but they have a valuable lesson to teach, and the mentor can't really do anything about that. Or fourth, these two characters don't know each other, and the mentor is a role model, and the hero is just entirely unknown to them. Which is the direction that Up went. And all four of these are very useful and let you use this trope without getting into weird real-world manipulation and abuse. Remember, kids, it's cringe to trigger someone's trauma because you think that's how art works. Now we're going to touch on the if we talk the plot stops trope. The best way around this one is to just make your entire plot not contingent on a single conversation not happening. Because this will be on your audience's mind the entire time. So it's better to have a plot where, you know, talking once doesn't break everything. But if you really want to do this, make it exceedingly clear to your audience. Make the lack of communication the point and not something that looks like you forgot to account for. Maybe no one trusts each other, or make communication impossible. Show genuine attempts to communicate only for them to be met with indifference. Shit like that. Basically, just be a writer and actually try, Timothy. Quirky, relatable losers are actually just as easy to fix as edgelords. See, just make a character that doesn't refuse to grow and change. If you're going for a more comedic angle, let them grow and change, but keep whatever makes them quirky and relatable. Like, maybe you're trying to relate to the people with ADHD, and this character is super ADHD-coded. Maybe they start to wean off the destructive parts of the neurospicy, but they're constantly picking up new absurd hobbies. Like, one week they've decided they want to invent a new brass instrument, and the next they're trying to learn Vulcan from YouTube tutorials and guessing. Which I think is kind of the direction they went with Jake Peralta. I don't know because I haven't watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine in a while. Or if you're going for more dramatic, maybe their character growth is being constantly threatened and beat down, but they keep pushing on. It's also important that they're actually a loser. These characters lose a lot. Sure, it's easy to make them just lazy and stupid, but it's more relatable to make a character that's fucking weird and keeps getting bent over by life for it. And if you really want to lean in, demonstrate how big of a negative impact this has on their life. Like in Shaun of the Dead, Sean is relatable and quirky, but is also a complete loser, and everyone around him knows it and calls him out constantly for it. And finally, whataboutism. With whataboutism, it's important to understand that you can include it in your story as long as it doesn't get your sanction. Don't allow characters' whataboutist views to dominate a story and get actively not only questioned, but shown to be wrong. If you're trying to use it to justify something you believe, find a better reason. Like if you justify a character killing otherwise innocent magical creatures by saying the villain kills innocent normal people, then all you're saying is that two unrelated genocides balance out. Which, hey, that's not fucking true, is it? If you want to compare wrongdoings, make sure it's a situation of comparison. Like choosing who to back in a coup or picking one of two evils. It's not about negating the actions of one for the actions of another. It's about picking what you can and can't accept. And with that depressingly real note, let's go to the soapbox. Man, cringe is easy. I'm sure that's not too big of a surprise, but I don't mind a lot of cringy writing. Now, granted, I understand how problematic a lot of the ways to write cringe is, but besides it immediately making me not want to read the story, a lot of cringe stuff in writing is just kind of meh to me. And it's not because I'm such a merciful and forgiving writing god or some shit like that. It's honestly because my teenage years is so full of so much cringy writing, tone-deaf events and plots, and really the only redeeming quality being decent dialogue. I just think I don't care as much about cringe because when I see my old writing, that's all I see. I think I've just kind of become desensitized to it. And that being said, I think if you have cringe writing traits, you need to knock it the fuck off. Because look, you might think that your stories are cool or challenging or too much for those soft, woke liberals to handle, but that's not it. People don't like them or feel uncomfortable not because they don't understand. They don't like them because you're being cringy. So get better. Be a better writer, be a better storyteller, and for the love of all that is holy, don't fucking try to hurt your audience, you fucking psycho. Had to put Younger Me on blast there. Motherfucker thought he was a writing genius by making everyone else uncomfortable. Anyways, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast feed, like it, leave a review, whatever else it is you can do on your platform of choice. Send me an email at waytatpods@gmail.com, that is waytatpods@gmail.com, with questions, concerns, opinions, compliments, insults, I'm actuallys, why I'm more cringe than anything I said today, tropes you find cringy, and anything else you want to tell me. Also follow me on Twitter at waytat_pods. Remember to check out my other podcast, Waytat, where I talk about topics that usually get me a bit more heated. All right. Have a good night. Have fun. Keep writing. And remember, don't be cringe, you fuck. This has been Why You're Talking About This Nerd. I've been your host, William. Good night.